Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Ryan Porth here with you, taking you through a lot of stuff to talk about with the Nashville Predators. We have a jam-packed show coming up here. In just a little bit, you'll hear from Terry Crisp, the mayor of Smashville, talk about everything going on with this hockey team on the ice. And then Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road and NHL.com, he'll join me later on to discuss some of the trade rumors that are starting to surface as it pertains to the Nashville Predators from both Pierre LeBrun and Elliot Friedman. So looking forward to that later on in the show. And Saturday night, the Nashville Predators collect what I would call their best win of the season. It was their best performance of the season. And really, they took it to the Blue Jackets for a good 40 to 50 minutes of that game. They win 4-2 over the Blue Jackets. You get two goals from Cali Yarncroke. Yarncroke and Forsberg had goals less than a minute apart to start the third period, make the game 4-2 as it was tied going into that final frame. Pekka was once again solid all the way around. And I got to say, it was a nice change of pace watching that game versus the previous six games, where watching this team offensively was like watching paint dry. Where was that effort all season long, the one that we saw Saturday night in Columbus? Hopefully for the Predators' sake, they can continue that. They can carry it over into this week's pair of series in Detroit, and then home against the same Columbus Blue Jackets for a back-to-back coming up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at home at Bridgestone Arena. And if they want any prayer of getting back in the playoff hunt, you need at least 6 or maybe even 7 to 8 points in these next four games, because the schedule toughens up starting next week. You start getting back into Carolina, Florida, Tampa, and that goes on for 2 to 3 weeks. So if there's an opportunity to collect some points in the standings, it is this week, especially after Saturday night's effort. But look, the fan base isn't going to get excited about this particular Predators team after just one win like Saturday. It was a nice win. It was nice to see someone like Yarncroke get a pair. He almost got a hat trick. It was nice to see Philip Forsberg once again scoring a big goal for this team. But this fan base is not going to get excited for this Predators team unless they go on a prolonged run of success where the eye test is favorable. And there just hasn't been enough of that this season to tell us that is going to happen. This is not a playoff team. Not in a Central Division where there are 5, maybe even 6 teams better than you and already have a big head start in the standings. I mean, the Preds are still 7th in the Central Division when it comes to points percentage. It's not good. And it's caused many Preds fans to wonder if this team is going to be selling before the trade deadline coming up on April 12th. And again, we'll get to all of that coming up later in the show with Robbie Stanley. But obviously, the start of this season for the Nashville Predators has not been good, especially prior to Saturday's win against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Offensively, they've been lethargic, with no chemistry, little urgency, and quite frankly, not much talent for John Hines to work with as he begins his first full season, if you want to call it that, as head coach of the Nashville Predators. And I've been getting a lot of texts, a lot of people asking me, what is wrong with this team? Why are the Nashville Predators playing so poorly this season? And I think there are a number of factors. You can look at some of the decisions from John Hines. You can look at some of the decisions from David Poile as general manager, maybe the collective decision to try to alter their identity. And this early in the season, it just hasn't worked even close to what they thought it would be. But I have a theory as to why we're watching what we're watching today. Again, I've had a lot of people ask me, why? Why is it that the Nashville Predators are the way they are right now? And my theory is something that I want to get your opinion on at my Twitter account, at Porth Game, at our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. My theory is that the root problem of what we're watching today, in my opinion, stems from David Poyle's inability to draft that elite goal-scoring forward. It's always been something brought up around David Poyle. Not only has he never won a Stanley Cup, he's also never drafted that elite goal-scoring forward for this Nashville team. He's accomplished a ton throughout his NHL career and will rightfully one day be in the Hockey Hall of Fame after being inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame just a couple seasons ago. But as it pertains to the theory of the fact that the inability to draft an elite goal-scoring forward is what we're watching today, consider this six-year window as it pertains to the NHL draft, okay? The 2010 NHL draft, you took Austin Watson at 18. You could have taken Evgeny Kuznetsov, Brock Nelson, Kevin Hayes before that first round was over. In 2011, they didn't have a first-round pick. They traded it for Mike Fisher. That's fine. Mike Fisher was great. But you took Mika Salamaki at 52 overall. In selections just after Salamaki, you could have taken Nikita Kucherov in Tampa Bay. You could have taken William Karlsson, who was drafted by Columbus, now in Vegas. 2012, you didn't have a first-round pick because of Paul Gostad. 2013, you took Seth Jones fourth overall. That was the right pick. He's obviously turned into Ryan Johansson. 2014, you took Kevin Fiala at 11. Nice player. Could have had Dylan Larkin or David Pastrnak. 2015, you had no first-round pick because of Cody Franzen and Mike Santarelli. One of the worst trades that David Poyle has made at the trade deadline in his tenure as GM of the Nashville Predators. If they had retained that first-round pick and not given it up for two rentals in Franzen and Santarelli, with that pick, the Preds could have taken Travis Konechny, who went 24th overall to the Philadelphia Flyers. You also could have taken Jack Roslovic, Anthony Beauvillier, or even an early second-round pick in Sebastian Aho, who ended up with the Carolina Hurricanes. And they went 4 years, 2010 to 2013, without drafting a forward that was better than a third or fourth line guy. Think about that. That spans four drafts where you're not drafting a forward that is better than third or fourth line. But we all know, if you have been following the Nashville Predators since day one, the issues of drafting an impact forward dates back to the expansion years. And because you haven't been able to draft a goal-scoring forward, you've been chasing veteran forwards in trades or free agency to make up for it, to find that missing piece on the depth chart. Seth Jones, you traded him to Columbus because you needed that number one center in Ryan Johansson. I don't think you make it to the Stanley Cup final without Johansson in 2017, even though he got hurt in the third round. But long term, Seth Jones looks like a better defenseman than Ryan Jones will ever be a center. Consider this as well. You gave up a second-round pick, Sam Girard, and Vladislav Kamenev to Colorado in the Kyle Turris trade. A trade that coincidentally saw Matt Duchene go from Colorado to Ottawa and Kyle Turris from Ottawa to Nashville. You gave up a first-round pick to Chicago for Ryan Hartman. You then traded Hartman to Philadelphia for Wayne Simmonds. You traded Kevin Fiala to Minnesota because he wasn't working out here. You trade him to Minnesota for Mikael Granlund. Mikael Granlund has been a disappointment here. Kevin Fiala has worked out in Minnesota so far. And then you traded P.K. Subban's salary to sign Matt Duchene to a seven-year deal at essentially the same number. Again, a lot of moves that you're making because you can't draft these guys yourself. Think about it. Most of the top forwards in franchise history have all come via free agency or trades. Philip Forsberg, Steve Sullivan, Paul Kariya, Jason Arnott, J.P. Dumont, Mike Fisher, James Neal, Ryan Johansson, all free agents or trades. And you can make an argument that the best drafted forward by David Poyle is Victor Arvidsson, a fourth-round pick in 2014. Victor Arvidsson is the owner of the single-season goal-scoring record with 33 in the 2018-19 season, which is great, but 33 goals is their single-season record as a franchise. They are the only team in the National Hockey League to never have a 40-goal score in team history. So to get back to my theory that what we're looking at now, which is a team sitting well outside the playoff picture, it's going to take a big run from this team to get back in to said playoff picture. sitting at seventh in the Central Division, 7-10, and one of the worst offenses in the league. What we're looking at now is a product of the team spending valuable assets for rentals when they wanted to go for it, spending valuable assets for forwards to fill gaping holes on the depth chart that were not filled by your own draft picks. All of these moves had short-term payoffs, but long-term consequences. Look no further than Kyle Turris being on the hook through 2028 at $2 million per season. And those lost assets have now resulted in a cupboard that is largely empty and has been for the last few years. You can count on one hand the amount of prospects that truly get this fan base excited for the future. Filip Tomasino, Yaroslav Askarov, and maybe Eli Tolvanen, if Tolvanen can start playing better. He's been fine so far this season, but if he starts playing better, then maybe more people will start coming around on Tolvanen potentially being a top six forward in the future. But all those assets that you lost because you were trying to chase that forward, that goal-scoring forward, either at the trade deadline, in the offseason, early in a season, in free agency, what have you. The lost assets from those trades are going to make any potential rebuild longer because you don't have a great foundation of youth to quickly turn this around. And you could have had a foundation of youth if you had those assets. Now, I'm not saying that this team should not have gone for it in certain seasons. If you've been listening to this program long enough, you know that I was a pretty big fan of some of those trades, especially early on in the Kyle Turris trade. I thought that trade was going to pan out. It didn't. Early on, especially right when it happened, I loved the idea of Mikael Granlund coming to the Nashville Predators for Kevin Fiala. I was one step out the door on Kevin Fiala before he was traded. But you know what? That trade hasn't worked out either. And you traded a forward that you had drafted in the first round to get Mikael Granlund. Granlund's not going to work out. You're probably going to trade him at the deadline this year. But at the end of the day, David Poile has had to give up a lot of assets or spend a lot of money because they have not been able to draft the legitimate forwards slash goal scorers themselves. And to me, that is one of my theories as to why we are watching what we're watching, which is a pretty bad hockey team. That's my theory. I want to hear from you. 615-737-1025 on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Or hit me up on Twitter at PorthGame. Coming up next, Terry Crisp. I want to get his perspective on perhaps this theory and also what he's seeing from this team so far this season. And is there hope for this team to turn it around moving forward, especially this week as they play at Detroit tomorrow night, at Detroit Thursday night, and then host Columbus for a back-to-back both Saturday and Sunday. Tomorrow night, pregame begins at 5:30, puck drop at 6:30. All the action heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll have more Preds Insiders next with Terry Crisp here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. Preds Insiders here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined by the one, the only Terry Crisp to talk all things Nashville Predators on this Monday evening. Crispy, how we doing?
Fourth man, doing great. We all survived the snow and the rain and the sleet and the ice storms, etc. We're all starting to get about very carefully, mind you, at this present time, but we're out and moving again. So back to hockey time again.
Well, all of us survived the great snowstorm of 2021 here in Smashville. So hope everyone was able to stay safe. And Crispy, Saturday nights, I'm sure a lot of people were still trying to stay off the roads and they were at home watching or listening to the Nashville Predators beat up on the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-2. Two goals early in the third period, breaking the tie at 2-2 after two periods. Such a nice change of pace from what we had seen in the previous handful of games, wasn't it?
You know, it was. By and large, it was, yes. I mean, for a full 60 minutes, that's about as good as I've seen our hockey club play this season from start to finish. But having said that, if you recall, again, Pecorine, the first 4 or 5 minutes, he made 3 or 4 point-blank saves again. And we warned about those fast starts by Columbus, and Pecorine bailed us out. Then when they come roaring back and tied it, again, Pecorine had to. So I liked overall the game. I loved the win, and I really liked the 2 points. But the one area I still look at, and I still think we need a little work on, is protecting our goaltenders a little better. and especially in front of the net, head on a swivel, and watch the back door for them. Other than that, all the signs of the guys that we wanted to see start to play started to play.
Well, one of the marks of a franchise goaltender is always the fact that when you're under siege, you're getting a lot of pressure, you can bail your team out with some big saves. And for the most part, Pecorine has been able to do that this season in a lot of his appearances. There have been some that just haven't gone the team's way or he hasn't gotten the run support. But what have you seen differently out of Pecorine in net this season compared to last when maybe he wasn't making those big saves?
Probably, you know what? He's calm now. I think he's crossed over the border of worrying about what's going to happen. He knows he doesn't have to. He knows what the situation is here. He knows that he is the man who has brought us this far, and he's still very much in demand. And he also knows that Saros is a very, very good young goaltender coming in, and we're taking a look at him strongly for the future because Pekka can't last forever as good as he is, and we'd like him to, but it's not going to happen. And I think he's come to grip with the fact that when he's needed, he'll be there to play for you. And if he's needed more than they thought it was going to be necessary, he'll be just fine and dandy with that too. And I love the way that he encourages and backs Saros going on the ice, coming off the ice, tapping on the bench. I love his mentoring of Saros. So to me, that puts the whole ball of wax that he is a true teammate.
Terry Crisp here with us on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Crispy, Saturday night you had a lot of different lines going offensively for this team, which hasn't been the case for most of the year. But Callie Yarncroak, two goals, including one on the power play. You had Colton Sissons chip in with one in the first period. Philip Forsberg with a big goal in the third period to double the Predators' lead. Did you feel like there was more urgency in the Predators' game offensively than we've seen prior?
Yes, definitely. And you heard the players talking about it. You heard the coaches talking about it. And I think what was happening was they were going in spurts and starts. They'd go strong for a few shifts, then back off and not get it. And I think what was sort of depressing was the fact that when they were going strong, attacking hard in the offensive zone, making things happen, they weren't scoring. The pucks weren't going in either. They were missing the net. They're getting too many shots blocked, obviously, or off a post, off a crossbar. When that wasn't happening, the goaltenders we played against were hot. Now, a lot of times we made them look hot, shooting right into their gut or right into their glove hand. But that wears you down when you keep getting chances and you don't get the goals. And I think the other night was a great culmination of a strong effort, a full effort, and getting rewarded for it with the goals. And the ones you want to see starting to come alive, Forsey, you got to have him come alive. Duchesne, obviously, when Joey gets back. But it's nice to see guys like Yarncroak chip in and Sissons and Cunning and Cousins and the guys that are bringing in that you're going to have for your support one. That's the one also. You can't just keep relying every night on a Philip Forsberg or a Duchesne or a Josi. It becomes a little stale and a little harder on them. So what I liked was, yeah, the rest of the cast are starting to chip in.
Crispy, some positive news today at Predators practice where Ryan Johansson and Brad Richardson both participated in practice fully, and John Hines said after practice that there is a chance that both of them could return to the lineup tomorrow night against the Detroit Red Wings as they head up to the Motor City for a pair of games Tuesday and Thursday night. So for you, Crispy, the potential of getting Ryan Johansson back in the lineup, how much has this team missed his presence?
You know what? They missed Johansson in certain areas of the, obviously the face-offs. He wins huge face-offs. Which Sissons is very good at doing right now. I like his average also. And he's sort of a picture with Forsberg. And they seem to have confidence in each other and put Arvi in on that one also. That it's – he can be, if he wants to be, a game breaker. Like he can either set up the winning goal for somebody or he can slide around the net and do it. Now, having said that, Joey's been off for how long? So he does come back in and Richardson – let's be honest about this. You can't just sit back and say, oh boy, Johansson's back, Richardson's back, we can all relax. No. It doesn't work that way. They're coming in. They're going to need help also getting back into the swing of things.
I feel like Ryan Johansson has been a bigger absence for this team than maybe some people may realize. Even though, you know, Johansson has 4 points in 10 games. Those numbers aren't going to stand out by any means, but just the sheer presence that he can bring physically on the ice, and then how it slots everybody almost correctly from a depth chart standpoint, where if you have Johansson on the first line, that means Duchesne's on the second line, and you don't have players maybe playing in roles that they shouldn't be playing in or otherwise wouldn't be playing in. Do you feel like that can have an added bonus of Johansson's return to the lineup as well?
From a depth chart standpoint? Yes, definitely. And I'll tell you, the happiest guys would be the coaching staff, because we keep saying Coach Hines is doing a great job of shuffling, but he gets tired of it. And he keeps getting tired of handing the new deck of cards every night. And where is he going to play them? And how is he going to play them? And it's not fun for him or the players. Like you said, if you put Joey back in the lineup, Richardson's going to be a regular in the lineup. Now you've got some stability. Now you know night to night who you're playing with. Now you know who to talk with. Now you know who to lean on and say, okay, it's our turn on this shift. Let's get it done. We haven't had a good period so far, or whatever it's going to be. But yeah, Richardson's a veteran. A proven veteran, won a cup. Joey is obviously a veteran and a leader in this hockey club. So with them back in our lineup, we should be stronger.
Terry Crisp here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Crispy, speaking of line juggling, what is it like as a coach to have to make the determination of when a certain line combination or combinations aren't working and it's time to change it up? How much patience do you have, especially – you know, with John Hines, the fact that that he's just trying to string together some wins, you know, does that change the patience level from the normal patience level of changing up your lines?
Definitely. If you're winning, there's no big problem. You can move bodies around and they're clicking and they're doing things. The guys are not slotted where you like them to be, but you're still winning and you're still pulling out some points. That takes all the pressure off. But if you're not winning and the bottom line is to win, then you got to find the combo. It's your job as a coach or as players to figure out who can go with who and who can do what. I always keep saying when I was coaching is that I never shifted a whole line apart. And if you notice, Laviolette, you did this all the time, always left two guys together. And usually when we had them, it was always Joey and Arby stayed together. They'd move Forsey around to see if they could get him going or another centerman going or whatever. And if you look at coaches, if they do have to make changes and slot guys in, they would prefer not to put three different guys all in one, like throw Forsberg and throw Sissons in the middle and whoever, Grimaldi on the right, that haven't played a whole lot together. So I think the idea of a coach, when you have to change and work combos around, is to always try and leave two of the guys have been on that line together.
Terry Crisp, you were a part of the Smashville Live here a couple weeks ago with Jordan Tutu. it was a great conversation between you, Tutu, and our very own Chase McCabe. If anyone listening did not catch that, you can catch it on demand at thegamenashville.com. But Crispy, it felt like, you know, you were reunited with like your long lost son in Jordan Tutu. That's what it felt like watching that program. for any listeners out there that may have missed that or weren't around when Jordan Tutu was here in Nashville, what can you say about just the sheer impact that he had on the fan base here with the Predators?
Oh, they loved him. I mean, if you go back over, and I'm not a thing on this, but if you go back over favorite players and the amount of jerseys that sell, say a Pecorine jersey versus who's ever jersey, or a Paul Kariya versus whoever, Tutu is right up in there with the three of them. I would say that those three, you know, for the jersey, Jordan Tutu brought an excitement. The fans knew it, the Tutu whistle they had. And the minute he hit the ice, you'd hear those whistles start to go. And they knew, they just knew, they all started to stand up because something was going to happen. He's going to drive to the net and take the goalie and the net into the corner. He's going to run into an 8-foot guy and see if he can bowl him over, whatever. But he did it consistently. A tough way to make a living, believe me. But Jordan Tutu knew if he wanted to stay in the NHL, this was his mode. And the conversation we had the other night, Constable McCabe and Jordan, it was fun. For me, it was because I have so much respect for Jordan Tutu both as a player when I was a player and as a coach when I was a coach, as to what he brought to this hockey club and what he gave to his teammates night in and night out. And I'm not sure we've ever reached that point again.
Perhaps my favorite part of that episode was you having the tutu whistle with you.
And it's autographed.
Oh, even better. Terry Crisp, the myth, the man, the legend. You can catch him on the TV broadcast on Fox Sports Tennessee. Crispy, always good to catch up with you.
Fourth man, always my pleasure. Anytime, take care. And to all of our Preds fans out there, thanks for hanging in with us. Stay with us. We'll get this done. See you all at the Bridgestone, hopefully in the near future.
All right, that was Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst. You can catch him with Willie and C-Mace and Lindsay and Kara and the crew, sometimes Hal Gill. Crispy, always a joy to catch up with to talk some Preds hockey. And as I mentioned in that conversation with Crispy, Ryan Johansson looks like he might be returning to the lineup. The domino effect of Johansson in the lineup, I think, is pretty stark. Going into Saturday's game, in the six games without Ryan Johansson, that offense had scored 1.3 goals per game, which is not good. But in the games prior with Ryan Johansson, they had scored 2.8 goals per game in the first 10 games of the season. So even though Ryan Johansson only has 4 points in 10 games this year, just the presence of Johansson has a domino effect, including his line mates. If you look at Victor Arvidsson's numbers, Arvidsson had 7 points in 10 games with Johansson in the lineup this season. Without Johansson in the lineup, Arvidsson has 0 points in 7 games. So I'm sure both Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson will enjoy having Ryan Johansson back in the lineup tomorrow night, if that happens, against Detroit. Also, I brought up Smashville Live with Crispy. Wednesday night, Smashville Live at 6 p.m., it will be Rocco Grimaldi and Kalle Järnkrok, the man who scored 2 goals Saturday night against the Blue Jackets. So looking forward to that. Again, Wednesday night at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, Robbie Stanley joins us to discuss some of the trade deadline rumors that are starting to perk up around the Nashville Predators. That's next right here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here, about to be joined by Robbie Stanley. Preds Insiders is brought to you every Monday by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental and sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Without further ado, I bring in Robbie Stanley from Robbie and Rex Road, thegamenashville.com, NHL.com, basically everywhere. Robbie Stanley joins us to talk some Preds and the trade deadline that will be here before we know it, coming up on April 12th. Robbie, how we doing?
I'm doing wonderful, Porth. How are you?
Doing just fine. Just fine. Now, over the weekend, Elliot Friedman, as the Predators are taking it to the Columbus Blue Jackets for about 50 minutes of those 60 minutes Saturday night in Columbus, they win 4-2. Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada puts out a report during the intermission segment where they go through all the headlines around the league. And Elliot Friedman said this about the Nashville Predators.
All right, some other things around the league. First of all, the Nashville Predators, they entered the day seventh in points percentage in the Central Division, and there's talk about what they're going to do. Word is maybe only three untouchables. Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and Pekka Rinne, who's towards the end of his career. I think other than that, the Predators are willing to listen on just about anybody. That includes Philip Forsberg. That also includes, I found really interesting, Dante Fabro.
All right, that was Elliot Friedman Saturday night on Hockey Night in Canada. And that caused a pretty big reaction on Twitter there, Robbie, with the fact that he listed Roman Josi, not Ryan Josi, Ryan Ellis, Pekka Rinne, but not Philip Forsberg as one of the untouchables for the Nashville Predators. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was. And to your point, that almost overshadowed the game on Saturday night based on the reporting there by Elliot. And look, it's no secret. This Predator season has not gone to plan so far. You're 7-10. You're kind of looking to see what your options could look like down the road here. And if things continue to go the way that they have, I think selling at some point is going to become inevitable for this Predators team. So what does that mean? Like who is open? Honestly, my first reaction to that report was with Ryan Ellis, not even with Philip Forsberg. I was like, okay, look, I think Ryan Ellis is a really good player, but with the contract that he has, I think 6 years left on it, $6.25 million per season, I would not consider Ryan Ellis to be untouchable. I certainly would not give him up just for anything. I think he's a really good player. I think specifically now that he's been healthy for the last couple of years, you see how good he is and how valuable he is. So I'm not saying the Predators should trade Ryan Ellis, but I'm also not saying that he should be untouchable either. Like, to me, the untouchable list is two guys. It's Roman Josi and it's Philip Forsberg. I mean, and Roman Josi takes care of itself. Number one, you wouldn't trade him anyway, but number two, he's got a full no-movement clause. So he's not going anywhere unless he just absolutely wants to at that point, and there's no indication that that's the case. So Roman Josi's not going anywhere. Philip Forsberg, to me, is not quite on that level, but he's pretty close. Like, you've been working your entire franchise to bring in a guy like Philip Forsberg. You've done it. He's had a great year so far. I think he's played really well. He's been the one guy that I think's played pretty consistently on a night-in and night-out basis. I guess you would listen to some trade offers on him because you'll listen to pretty much anybody, but it would take something outstanding for me to even consider trading Philip Forsberg. So those are my two immediate reactions to that report by Elliot Friedman. I would not have Ryan Ellis on the list, even though I think he's a really good player. And Philip Forsberg, if he's not absolutely untouchable, he's pretty close to me if I'm the Predator.
So the Forsberg one is interesting because he's in the same situation as Mattias Ekholm, where Ekholm has a year and a half left on his deal. So does Philip Forsberg. So I think on the surface, we all sit back and say, there's no way they would trade Philip Forsberg. If behind the scenes, you know that Forsberg is going to look to test free agency, I would argue his value has never been higher than what it is right now with how he's started the season. Teams can trade for him and get two playoff runs out of him and not just one, which I think is important. And at the same time, I'm not trading Philip Forsberg.
No.
If there's a remote chance that he is re-signing after this current contract, that he's going to be here long-term, I would not trade Philip Forsberg. Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi are two players on this team where I feel pretty confident that they could still be, maybe not in the heart of their prime, but still be very good players by the time the Preds are out of this funk that they're in. That, look, they could have to go into a rebuild, whether that's short-term or long-term. You know, you never go into a rebuild thinking that it's going to take you 5, 6, 7 years like it's taken with the Detroit Red Wings. But if it's a 2 to 3 year rebuild, I do feel pretty confident that Forsberg is still going to be a 30 goal scorer by the time you're good again, and that Roman Josi is going to be a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman or close to it by that time. I have a hard time thinking that Forsberg is going to get dealt unless David Poile gets his socks knocked off.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it'll have to take. I mean, Philip Forsberg's 26 years old. So it's not like you're talking about a guy that's, you know, close to being out of his prime. Theoretically, he's really just getting into his prime right now, which is exciting if you're a Predators fan. Now, to your point, I think this conversation changes if you know or have an inkling that Philip Forsberg is not interested in hanging around. I don't get that vibe. I think Philip Forsberg is very comfortable here. I think he likes it here in Nashville. Now, the team on the ice is obviously the most important thing, and right now that's not going well, and it's not trending in the right direction. So maybe at the end of the day, that trumps everything else, and Forsberg decides to test free agency after that. And if that's the case, then I think you have to reconsider this, but you can reconsider it next year and still get a pretty good haul
for
Philip Forsberg.
Sure, and Forsberg could wait until his contract is up and see what the landscape looks like for the Nashville Predators to see whether or not he wants to commit here long-term or go to somewhere that there's a better outlook on potentially competing for a Stanley Cup. So that was interesting. Now, Sunday, Pierre LeBrun put out, or maybe it was Saturday. I think it was Saturday, actually. I'm getting my days mixed up. Saturday, Pierre LeBrun put out an article on The Athletic talking about Mattias Ekholm. Now, this audio that I'm about to play was from Pierre LeBrun last week on TSN, where Pierre LeBrun stated that the Nashville Predators were on the brink of selling.
And just over a quarter of the way into the season, but the Preds are starting to lose sight of the playoff teams. Could we see them become sellers, Pierre?
Yeah, I think that's where this is headed. I don't know that the Predators have outright decided they're sellers, but they're right on the brink. And there's some obvious names, obviously. Listen, Mikael Granlund, Eric Halla, they signed one-year deals. They'll be UFA at the end of the year. Those will be your pure rentals. But there's a more intriguing name when I talk to teams around the league that they hope will be on the market. And I think there's an absolute solid chance that the Predators at least listen. It's top four defenseman Mattias Ekholm, who has been a long-standing member of that organization. He's got a year and a half left on his contract at a real bargain price of $3.75 million. He does not have any no-trade protection. And again, this would really be about the Predators perhaps seeing what's out there, and if they don't like it, then keeping him. But think of the Jake Muzzin deal of a couple of years ago where he had a year and a half left on his deal. Alec Martinez last year, he had a year left. That top four D that has a couple of playoff runs in him can be appealing to a contender. That would be an intriguing name.
That was Pierre LeBrun last week stating that the Predators at that time were on the brink of selling. And obviously a big focus of that clip was Mattias Ekholm. Pierre LeBrun listed four potential suitors for Mattias Ekholm if Ekholm were traded by the deadline. And those four suitors are Boston, Winnipeg, Washington, and Philadelphia. And look, so earlier today, Robbie, on Robbie and Rex Road, you were saying how you would think long and hard about actually trading Ekholm because he's someone that you would consider signing long-term.
Yeah.
I wouldn't spend much time thinking about this if you can get what Pierre LeBrun states in his article on The Athletic, which is a first-round pick and a prospect, which is the Jake Muzzin deal from L.A. to Toronto, in which Muzzin still had more than just 1 year left on his deal. I think Ekholm is a better player than Jake Muzzin. Who knows if he would yield more than that? But a first-round pick and a prospect for a team that has struggled to fill the cupboard with assets, I think would be a wise long-term move, as difficult as it may be for some people to watch Mattias Ekholm leave Nashville.
Yeah, I certainly understand that side of it. And I'm not saying I totally disagree with you. Now, I'll throw this out there. I would trade Ryan Ellis before I trade Mattias Ekholm. I would, just based on the contract. And that goes back to the discussion we had a few minutes ago. Under no circumstance would I consider Ryan Ellis to be untouchable. I think if you did go the route of re-signing Mattias Ekholm, in the long run, he would be cheaper. And I think, honestly, if you wanted to keep him on the second pair, you could. He's a first pair guy, in my mind. I think he could be dynamite. So,
I mean, think of some of the options that were laid out there by Pierre LeBrun in The Athletic. Boston.
Yeah.
He would be the top pair with Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah.
Like, they have a glaring need for a left-handed defenseman.
Sure.
And Winnipeg, you know they need defense help. He would be on their top pair.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, probably on their top pair. I mean, and the list, I would have to imagine, does not stop at four.
Oh, no.
A team like Pittsburgh, if they're trying to get back into the hunt as a Stanley Cup contender and try to give it one more shot with both Crosby and Malkin, mm-hmm. it's a very affordable contract for two playoff runs, which could be that window, per se, for the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, with their current group, I'd have to imagine Toronto would be in on that. And Pittsburgh and Toronto are two teams that are always up against the cap. And Ekholm's contract is very favorable for teams like that. So if he is commanding that much interest, if there's half dozen to a dozen teams calling David Poile about Mattias Ekholm, I have to think that David Poile could at least get a first-round pick and a prospect for Ekholm.
Oh, I would think so. And what I think could happen, and that you would hope would happen if you're the Predators in that situation, is there's a bidding war, and all of a sudden that price gets driven up even higher.
Exactly.
And you can get a higher price back. And if that happens, maybe a deal is presented to you that you just can't refuse if you're the Predators. I just kind of approach it this way. The way Mattias Ekholm plays the game, I'm pretty confident he's still going to be pretty good for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So, to your point, depending on how long you think this rebuild or retooling or whatever you want to call it process takes, I think Ekholm is still a guy that can help you on the other side, to the point where, like I said, I would trade Ryan Ellis before I would trade Mattias Ekholm.
So let me combat that with what's going to help you more on the other side. Ekholm at age 33, 34, 35, or the first round pick and a prospect? or a first round pick and a younger player that is already being developed at the NHL level?
Well, I mean, it's a fair question. I mean, you've got a hit on the first round pick and you've got a hit on the prospect. I mean, that's, you're dealing with unknowns there. You know what Ekholm is. And also, like, you know, Ryan Ellis, same age. So to me, like, there's no way you can move forward here with all of them in price. Like, Yossi's going to be here. We know that. I have a hard time seeing 2-3 years down the road, Ekholm and Ellis both still being here. So you're dealing with players that are roughly the same age. Ellis costs more. I understand offensively he's been more productive. Also has more of an injury history as well. That's the route I would go. I would trade Ryan Ellis before Matias Ekholm.
I would agree with you. I just don't know how realistic that is given his contract.
I know.
You know, given the fact that he still has a lot of years left on that deal, I almost think the Preds would have to eat some of that contract to be able to trade him and get a return that is comparable to what you're going to get from Matias Ekholm.
Which goes back to just how incredible the contract was for Matias Ekholm to begin with. And that's what makes him so attractive on the open market. Look, if this is the route the Predators end up deciding to go, they're going to get a pretty good haul back. Now, you got to hit on your draft pick after that, and you better do your homework on the prospects. And they've shown a pretty good ability to do that in the history of their organization. But you never want to lose a guy like Matias Ekholm. But the fact of the matter is, if it continues going this way, this group is going to have to be shaken up. And there quite simply will be players going out the door that fans don't want to see leave, but that's just the reality of the situation.
Well, with the way things have gone on the ice over the last few weeks, how they've been almost unbearable to watch at times, you have this talk here popping up in the last week where you have two of the top insiders around the league in Elliott Friedman and Pierre LeBrun basically saying that the Preds are going to be sellers unless something unexpected happens in the next few weeks. I think we're going to learn pretty quick here in the next few weeks what this team is going to do, especially if they're going to be trading with Canadian teams. Because if April 12th is the trade deadline and there's a two-week quarantine for anybody going from the U.S. to Canada, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois had to sit out for 14 days going from the Jackets to the Jets. I don't think any Canadian team is going to wait until April 12th to acquire a player from a U.S. team, because then April 26th, would be the end of that quarantine.
You've essentially got 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have to think that Canadian teams are going to be moving on these players, you know, by mid-March at the latest.
Yeah, and that forces you, if you're the Predators, to move your timeline up, because you don't want to be dealing with a limited market either. We just talked about, you know, trying to get in a bidding war and driving that price up. Well, if you take out the Canadian teams, that does not help you in that process. So to me, if you're the Predators, you get through the end of this month here, the early part of March, and I mean like the first week of March, you probably need to have a clear idea of what your plan is moving forward and how you're going to handle the trade deadline. Because if that's the route they decide to go and they sell off some pieces, they could get a pretty good haul back this year. Not just with Ekholm, but I think Granlund could fetch you maybe a second round, first round pick.
Just
I mean, they've got
the composite amount of assets they could accrue through this.
Yeah.
Between Ekholm, Granlund, 1 year left on it. You know, he was a 1 year deal. So. Yeah. He's in the last year of his contract. Eric Halla in the last year of his contract. I would consider trading a player like Nick Cousins and seeing what you could get for him. He's the type of player that some teams might want in their bottom six for a potential playoff run.
Agreed.
I would also contemplate trading Victor Arvidsson.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about players on good contracts like Matias Ekholm. I mean, Arvidsson, yes, he still has 3 years left after this one. But is that 4.25? He has scored 30 goals in his career. Mm-hmm. And the farther you get away from those 30-goal seasons, the less his value is going to be in a trade. And I would leave, almost like a game of poker, leave the table while you're winning and see if you can get something really good in return for Arvidsson, whether it's a really good prospect or say a second round pick and a prospect, whatever that package may look like for somebody like Victor Arvidsson, I would strongly consider doing that now. And then on the other side of this, on the other side of the trade deadline is when I would bring up a player like Philip Tomasino and really give him a shot to get some valuable NHL experience going into next season, which is hopefully his first full NHL season.
I agree. I mean, I think you've got to consider it with Arvidsson at this point. Quite frankly, he's been disappointing this year in his production. I think he's played okay, but two goals is not going to cut it.
I mean, ever since the Bortuzzo hit,
yeah.
I mean, he had flashes in the bubble.
Yep.
But he just, quite frankly, has not been the same player since the Bortuzzo hit last season. And I would strongly consider this.
I would too. And I know people are listening to this thinking, all right, how could you get through this without trying to trade Duchesne or Johansson? It's not going to happen. Like, nobody's taking those contracts right now. Your best hope for that right now is maybe throwing a couple draft picks at Seattle and seeing if one of them will take them in the expansion draft coming up this offseason. So I don't consider those two to be a realistic option for the Predators in season this year. Maybe you can find a way in the offseason, but I agree. I think you have to strongly consider striking while the iron is hot on Victor Arvidsson.
No doubt about it. Robbie Stanley, you can catch his work every weekday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. on Robbie and Rex Road here at ESPN 102.5 The Game and thegamenashville.com and NHL.com. And I'm sure, you know, everywhere else.
Find me at a Waffle House somewhere down the line, too.
He does work at Waffle House, yeah, or Cracker Barrel. I have seen that firsthand.
Yep.
Robbie Stanley, thank you so much.
Thanks, brother.
All right. Good stuff there from Robbie Stanley, talking all things trade rumors as they are starting to percolate a little bit across the NHL, including the Nashville Predators. Thanks to Robbie Stanley for joining me. Thanks to Terry Crisp for joining me earlier in the show as well. And if you've missed any of the show, you can catch it all on demand at thegamenashville.com or search Preds Insiders on Apple or Spotify. Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Preds Insiders. Pre-game coverage at 5:30, puck drop at 6:30 tomorrow night as the Preds visit the Detroit Red Wings. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.